Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate House Witches with Dorian Wallace, and always accompanied by my amazing sister, Raina Starr. Hello. Where you at, sis? Oh, shit. That's right. I forget. I don't
know
why.
This is her only way, because it's the only way to shut me up, obviously. You know, I'm the older sister. I get no fucking respect. Oh, goddess, protect me from my baby sister.
She is a
Ryan new listeners. No, I'm Joe Rogan. For any new listeners, this is not a G-rated show. It's not even a PG-rated show. I swear fucking sailor, so if you need any evidence, you just heard it. Escort the kids out of the room. Okay. Good evening.
What? You know, I've got to contact, because this has been, like, what, 3 weeks in a row that this has done this to you?
And yes.
That it has, like, automatically put you on hold. And
yes.
I'm starting to get a little pissed off. Because it's I'm not putting you on hold. That's kicking me off.
Okay. I don't know why she tells us to hold on when we're on the air live, but okay.
No, the cats are off doing something. Sorry.
They're plotting against you. It's all evil.
They are always plotting against me. Are you kidding me? They're trying to smother me in my sleep. It's like, cats. Love them.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead and give your shout out, and let's get this ball.
I
got to
give my shout. Yes, I got to give my shout out to my cousin Jessica. If y'all listening, go and send you a knuckle sandwich and a bag of chips. Love you, Jess.
Love you, Jess. So, what's been going on in your life this week since last we visited with everybody?
Let's see. My husband has been working a split shift, so I really haven't seen him this week.
Lucky you.
Yeah, I love him, but I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing. You know.
People need a break from each other.
I'm getting ready to head into week 3 of this break.
Let me just say this about absence making the heart grow fonder. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. It also gives you an extra amount of time to plot their demise. So accept this time with the grace it deserves.
Yeah, you know, the fact that I've been buying bags of lime while he's been asleep, I'm not going to say anything about that.
It's just
I'm kidding.
Us.
I'm totally kidding. I love my husband.
Only a couple of thousand people are listening right now, so you're all right. Nobody's going to tell.
I know.
They won't rat you out.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I live in North Carolina. If I was going to do anything, I'd go down the street. There's like 2 or 3 hog farms down the street. Hello. Easy disposal. Anyway, enough said.
Enough said.
So
what's
been going on in your world?
Okay. So I noticed something interesting this week. I got I bought myself a present. It was a From Me to Me Love Me present, which
Ooh, and it was a bracelet.
I know, I did too. And I bought myself a Byzantine sterling bracelet, and I put it on my wrist, and this little voice was in my head and said, don't you think you ought to, like, put that on your altar first and clean it? And I was like, oh, no, it's fine, not a problem, not a problem. And, well, I went to put it on, and it wouldn't fit. And I went, okay, maybe I should go ahead and clean this bad boy. So I did. Mm-hmm. I cleaned it. I put it on my altar. I asked the gods to bless it. And 2 hours later, I said, are we good? Are we cool now? Can I put this thing on? And sure enough, it fit. So pay attention to the little voice, because... the life you save might, the bracelet you might be wearing might be your own or some crazy shit like that. But yeah, I often don't get away with ignoring the gods when they are asking for the attention they're due. So
yeah.
We have a guest tonight. Let's talk about our guest before he shows up. What do you want to say?
I am so excited. We have
the gushing is about to commence. Go ahead, babe.
Yes, I will try not to gush too much. I've been in contact with this gentleman for probably about a year. But Mr. Don Michael Craig, and I am so happy that he has agreed to come on and talk to us. And especially he has started holding workshops, like classes and stuff. And it's so funny because, you know, I've been talking about it on my page. So therefore, some of my clients have actually signed up for his class, which I just think is just awesome because, you know, the whole full circle thing. But
yeah,
what
are the classes on?
He's got a couple, like, I think my client signed up for his defense class, which is next month. And we, let me find the link. Come on. Where's my link? And I've got to warn you folks, I stupidly ate some greasy food before the show, which was not a good idea. So I'm like battling a rumbling tummy here. So I greatly apologize.
Well, his upcoming class on the 28th is on tarot and magic.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
yeah. And he's got one coming up in August about magical self-defense, which is the one that one of my clients signed up for. And I think he's trying to schedule some more, but and I'm going to post this in the links. And you can find all of his links in our blog. But I will post this in the chat room because there's a couple people in there. So there you go, people. I love you.
Like handing out candy. Okay.
Yes,
so
I love it. It's like Halloween.
Who's interested in a quick reading?
Yes, everybody.
Thank you. Okay, here we go. I'm going to shuffle.
Yeah, and I'm going to stay out of it this time because, like
She's
I said,
gonna stay
I'm not
out of
know.
It. Yeah, her tummy is. Her tummy is yucky.
Yes, I'm sorry. Thank you, sis.
You're welcome. All right, this is being done with the Buckland Domino Divination Deck, as always. I have shuffled. I have laid out. Don't gamble. You can't win. I hate when it says that.
You know, that's been popping up a lot in the past 6 months.
Yeah, I don't know why. Okay, so the next card, I've only pulled five. Don't gamble, you can't win. Journey with a good friend. Seize the opportunity to travel. So in essence, you're thinking, nah, maybe I shouldn't. No, maybe you should. Business prosperity, it's going to wind up being a business trip. And then it says, unlucky caution needed. That just drives me batshit. Let's have a reading in seven directions at once. I want to hear what RGS has to say about tarot, because I'm curious. but this is one of our this is one of our male friends.
Okay.
And he is going to email me after the show.
I think I knew who you're talking about.
Yes, because he wants more information. I already can tell. He's trying to make a decision because this is a person who has on more than one occasion tried to start something up and has run into roadblocks. I already know who this is. They know who they are.
Okay.
Yes, my love, I will talk to you after the show. Okay. So that was for a certain person.
He's in the chat room, by the way.
Of course he is.
I know who you're talking about too.
Yes, and he knows. And weirdly enough, he knows that it's him, and tell him, because I cannot see the chat room, please tell him, yes, we'll talk afterwards. I've left the cards pulled for him so we can have a little convo on the instant messenger later. So there you go. I try to be good. It doesn't always work as well, you know. I had an ethical quandary this week.
Okay, tell me.
I work with a person who isn't happy in their position, and this person had propped themselves up as a friend of mine for many years, and I was asked my opinion by a superior person in the company, and I actually made the statement of, do you want me to dump the body?
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And basically the answer came back that this person has acted in a manner that before they can do any further damage to the rest of us, that maybe we better dump this body. So I'm kind of torn back and forth a little bit about it, but and I'm still working out what the right thing to do is, but yeah, I think it's time to dump a body. So I'm back and forth with it, but sometimes we get asked these questions about what we should do or what other people should do, and you've got to be really careful when you're giving advice, because it's a chain reaction just like anything else in the universe. So tread lightly, because the life you save might actually wind up being your own. It's going to be an interesting Monday, I can tell you that much. Yeah. Because, I mean, somebody puts another person's livelihood in your hands, and it's like, I need all the details. And I actually have all the details, and it's still hard to just, the angry side of me says, yeah, go ahead and dump the body. And the kind part of me says, can't she just do it herself? You know?
No, she can't.
A lot of people don't want to go into that gentle good night on their own. They need a little assistance. So,
yeah.
Politics is in almost every aspect of life, whether it's, you know, politics in government or it's politics in the office. We're all trying to keep everything in balance, and that's kind of hard. So,
well, And I'll be honest, having been privy to previous information and just feelings, as far as, you know, I've gotten vibes off of this particular person.
Yeah.
You're doing everybody a favor. So.
I know you don't
because your heart is involved. Mine's not. I don't give a shit about this girl.
I know you don't.
Jump the body. Dump the body.
Oh, God.
All parties involved will be better off. Trust me. Because I have a funny feeling. You know what the phrase comes to mind? Is
what?
She's one that will throw people under the bus.
And she has. And she's done it to me. I mean, granted, that's true. And that's previous information that you already had. But it's still something that I have to think about.
I know, because you're not.
Well, I'm not good. That's so not true. and I will deny it if anybody ever says it. I am not.
Trying to ruin your reputation here.
I'm telling you, my reputation exceeds me. I'm not as good a person as my sister likes to make out, but... But I appreciate that because you love me, so.
I do.
But we'll see. But, I mean, you know, as I try to express when we're on the air, you know, for those listeners that are not pagan, Wiccan, whatever, we're just like everybody else, same bullshit in our lives as everybody else's bullshit. There's nothing extraordinary happening here. Just saying.
Yeah,
so,
you know, as much as we would love to be riding around on broomsticks, holding crystal balls and turning people into rats, doesn't happen. That would be fun.
It would be hilarious.
That would be so much fun.
I know. Don't you wish we had that kind of power going on? I'm serious.
I'm like, damn, that
would be cool.
I have to tell you, there are very few instances, mostly with kids, like especially snotty kids. There have been a few times it's like, you know, I will see a kid acting up, you know, and the parent, of course, not paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, rah, 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 rah. You know, and it's like, you have to sometimes just lean down. You know, I'm a witch, right? And they're like, the eyes go kind of wide. So, like, yeah, I can turn you into a rat or a rabbit or whatever, whatever you deem necessary at that point. And
you're
they're
hilarious.
Like, no, you can't. It's like, yeah, you should see what happened to the last kid. And you just stand back and just like,
You're so bad.
I am. I'm evil. And you wouldn't guess that I'm a parent.
Well,
I have
honestly,
two boys.
I would guess that you're a parent because it's a tactic all parents need. I'm serious.
Yeah,
we all need that little extra threat once in a while. Are you kidding? I use it on husbands. Please don't even go there because I'll use it anytime necessary. Not a problem.
But it's funny because they kind of look at you like, oh, you can't do that. And then there's that little gleam in their eye like, oh, shit, she could probably do this. Because you give them that
like,
look.
Yeah, what if she
like,
actually
go ahead,
decides
try me.
To make this happen? Yeah, really?
Uh-huh. Try me, kid. Try me. Oh, you know, and I... bad. It's so bad, but yeah, those kids that are running around the friggin' store, you know, see now this is reason number 5:28 why I don't shop at Walmart, because people don't watch their kids. But, you know, people don't watch their kids for the most part in regular grocery stores. And it's like every once in a while, it's just fun to do that. If the parents don't hear you.
Yeah, if the parents don't hear you. You don't want to scare off the entire neighborhood.
Exactly. Well, see, that's why you don't shop in your own neighborhood.
Oh, that's the secret.
Oh.
Shop in somebody else's. Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah. You're shopping uptown. You don't shop
You're
in your
hilarious.
Own neighborhood.
Yeah, geez. You're a riot. Where's our guest? Enough of this nonsense.
I know. Actually, let me bring him on. I'm sorry. He's probably
bring him on.
I
He's probably like,
talk to these crazy women.
I know, seriously.
Oh, God. Hello, Mr. Craig.
Oh, please. That was my father. You can call me Don.
Hi, Don.
How are you?
Well, I'm not having as much fun as you guys are yet.
Okay, well, join in, because that's what we're here for.
So let's see, you're going to your local Walmart and watching everybody else's kids.
No, honestly, that's the one place I will not go is Walmart. That is one place that truly frightens me. Walmart. No, thank you. Everywhere else, free game.
Cool.
So how are you?
I'm excellent, but I'll get better. Everything
okay,
is
well,
good.
I want to hear about you getting better. That's awesome.
Well, I'm always trying to get better and improve and learn new things. Oh, I have lots of my special philosophy expressions. So here is one of my personal proverbs. Death doesn't happen when you stop breathing. Death happens when you stop learning. So I try to learn something new every day.
Awesome.
I like that one.
So, for example, I just found out today that Sharknado is one of the stupidest movies ever made. I mean, just the name alone should give that away, but apparently people are talking about it all over the place.
Yes, I have seen it. I actually made a post about it on my Facebook page, because I had seen it no less than 20 times today and yesterday of this Sharknado. And now I don't subscribe to cable. And I was just like, oh, my God, I don't want to know what that is. I really don't. So I'm curious, did you actually watch it?
Oh, no. No, 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 no. See, I actually studied film at UCLA in the history of film. And when I saw the description of this, I went, no, 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 no. I did read the plot on Wikipedia, and that confirmed my concept of no, 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 no.
I don't even know what the hell it is.
Well, basically the plot is that there is some massive weather disruption that causes tornadoes that pick up sharks and deposit them in Los Angeles.
Stop it.
I grew up in Southern California.
I'm sorry?
That's your problem.
I grew up in Southern California, so I'm curious.
Yeah, I heard you. I just said I was sorry.
Yes, I know what I said.
No. I also grew up in Southern California, so.
Okay, virtual
sorry
high
for
five
both of you.
That one. I love that. That's funny. Yeah, okay, knowing this, both of us knowing this information, where the hell would sharks attack? even if a tornado deposited them, like, say, in Rialto, where I grew up.
Well, you seem to have discovered one of the many holes in the plot of this movie. According to what it said in Wikipedia, apparently they plot the demise of the sharks by flying up above the tornado in a helicopter and throwing bombs into the tornado so that the sharks would blow up. But apparently the heroine falls out of the helicopter and is assumed dead. But later on, the hero is attacked by a shark or something like that, and he grabs a chainsaw as he's attacked by the giant shark, and he cuts his way out. And it turns out that that was the exact same shark that swallowed the heroine whole, and so he's able to rescue her.
Oh, mother of God.
Okay.
This is ridiculous.
Yes, I'm sure all the people who are tuning in and going, oh, this will be a very interesting and edifying discussion on magic, occultism, and stuff like that, came in to hear about Sharknado, which, as I just found out, they're already thinking about having a sequel.
Oh, no. That is just all kinds of wrong.
As my wife says, that's just a whole bunch of wrong.
Yes, I agree with her.
That is just a ton of nope. No, thank you.
I'm sorry, folks. I know this is supposed to be a very informative hour, but this is hilarious, if you ask me.
I'm sorry to see you two so depressed. I hope I can say something that will cheer you up.
Yeah, seriously. Okay, I know nothing about Sharknado. I don't think I want to know any more than I already do. Thank you for explaining the plot, Don, and let's move on to you.
Absolutely.
All right.
I mean, you've got some classes coming up.
I have a couple of online webinars that people can attend and participate in. What happens is you sign up, and it would be like going to see one of my workshops in person. You'll see the slides that I would normally project on a screen, but you'll see them on your computer monitor, and you'll be able to hear me talking. You'll be able to ask questions, and I'll answer them, and it's all live. It's not we're doing here. We are live, but it's not recorded so that people will be able to go, oh, I can listen to it at any time. This is a specific time. So the first one I'm doing is on Sunday the 28th of this month, where on Tarot and Magic. I have a book out on that also, but this will be like getting a private lesson in it, or at least a live lesson. And if people out there know nothing about the Tarot, this is perfect for them. Just get your own Tarot deck, because we're working just with the images on the cards. You don't have to memorize anything or know anything. You'll have all the information. There's going to be handouts that you can download included with the course. And it's perfect for people who just want to learn how to use the Tarot in ways other than giving readings and divinations. And if people are good at giving divinations, then this takes what they do another step further. So, for example, you've probably had a reading at one time or another where someone says something like, well, you need to be more open open to new possibilities. And when I hear, and I used to give tarot readings like that, my first thought is, okay, how do I do that? And in this course, I'll be explaining how people can design and set up rituals so that, and magical techniques so that they can do that and make changes in their lives. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And then next month, on the 18th of August, I'm going to be doing another webinar, and this one is on magical self-defense. And in this one, I'll be talking about real and imagined magical attacks and psychic attacks, and I'll be giving specific directions on what to do and how to overcome them and make sure that they'll never affect you, never harm you, and they'll be ended once and for all. So I've got two of these wonderful workshops coming up, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Oh, that's perfect.
It's better than perfect.
I know.
And then for people in California, next February, I'm already planning out in advance. Next February, I'm going to be giving workshops at a huge festival in San Jose. It's called Pantheacon. And
I love Pantheacon. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Pantheacon is probably the leading, it's certainly the leading occult convention in the U.S., if not the world. We literally will have between 2,000 and 3,000 people there, and they'll be taking over the DoubleTree Hotel completely. There's us, and there's the help, and that's it. And there will be probably 50, maybe 100 workshops over the weekend, plus rituals, music, entertainment. There'll be places, a vending area. So I recommend that very, very highly. And then I have, more than a year from now, I'm working on getting a East Coast tour set up. So, and that's going to be, sort of sponsored, and the people working on it are my friends Raven and Stephanie Grimassi, some of you may know. I'm keeping very busy and having lots of fun.
Awesome.
Awesome.
You going to hit North Carolina at all?
No, I have not been to North Carolina in some time. About the closest that I've been to that recently is Florida, and there's a large festival there called Florida Pagan Gathering. They hold it twice a year, and I hope to be coming back to that one in the near future. So that's not too far from you. However, if there's any organizations in North Carolina that would like to have me come out and give workshops, you can get in touch with me through my website, which is www.modernmagic.com, and that's M-A-G-I-C-K, Modern Magic with a K.
Cool.
And if people go there, they can also see where I'm giving talks and workshops in the immediate future. In fact, you'll see it says Friday, July 12th. On the show Desperate House Witches. So it's right there and links. And if people are interested in bringing me out, they can go to the homepage or on workshops and go down to the menu to workshops I offer. And I have it split up by introductory, beginning, intermediate, advanced, and ones for special interests. So I've got lots and lots of workshops to offer, and I can set up new ones for people. Boy, this sounds like nothing but a plug for me, and so far it has been, which is wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you, thank you.
Absolutely. Well, the point of our show is to promote those in the pagan community. So, yeah, we want you to shamelessly plug yourself. That's the point.
Well, I have no shame, so I'm willing to plug myself. But one of the things that I always like to do is talk freely. Usually when I go to festivals and things like that, you can catch me, and I'm more than willing to talk about just about any topic at all. I also have a blog, which I relentlessly, usually on Monday and Friday, relentlessly share my ideas and things and tell you what's going on. And recently I've been getting lots of page clicks by being more controversial. Today. Well, controversy is always good. Today, for example, I discussed the topic of astral initiations. Now, for those people out there who don't know, the concept of an initiation is the idea of being brought not just into a group, like being initiated into a fraternity or sorority, but in the occult world, it's a combination of being brought into a group, but also aligning or linking up with that, with the spirit, with the energy, with the forces that keep that group going. So, for example, there's an energy behind various Wiccan groups, behind various ceremonial magic groups. It's sometimes called the magical current of that group. And then each local group has its own energy and its own force, which is called, and get ready for this, everyone, an egregore. It's a group spirit, if you will. And most people think, when you hear of initiation, they may think an occult initiation, you may think of a Masonic initiation or something like that, where people wear funny costumes and walk around in circles and say funny words and give out handshakes and things like that. And in some instances, unfortunately, that's exactly what they are. Mm-hmm. But in other instances, what happens is that if the people or person who is giving the initiation knows what they are doing, and you come into this new environment where people are wearing strange clothes and there are accoutrements all over and there are scents and smells and maybe you are required to make actions that you're unfamiliar with, this can trigger not just bizarre feelings like, what the hell is going on here, but also they can subtly cause you to go into like a trance-like state. So it literally alters you mentally, physically, emotionally, and psychologically, and opens you up to achieving that inner initiation that links you to the energy and the spirit behind the group. Now, that is what is sometimes called, that inner or higher planes initiation, is sometimes called an astral initiation. And the great occultist Dion Fortune said that it can happen any time and any place, but the key is that the physical initiation can often trigger it. And if the physical initiation is done well, then the astral initiation, that higher planes initiation, will happen at the same time. And that's why a lot of people will say, quite honestly, that the real initiation is not the physical one, but it's that higher planes one. It's the astral initiation. Unfortunately, there is a problem with all of this, which is there is something else which is also called an astral initiation. And that is where the people who are initiating you will sit in a room someplace, and they will do the work while you're at a distant place and you are perhaps doing something else. And the idea is that you meet up on a higher level of existence, a non-physical area called the astral plane, and you are initiated there. And because of the fact that, boy, finding occult groups, although it's easier today than when I started, it still can be quite challenging. And especially if you want to find a particular type of group, it can be very difficult to find them in your local area. So if you wanted to find a particular type of pagan group or a particular type of ceremonial magic group, they may not be in your area. So what people are doing instead is what could be called this astral initiation, which has benefits of you don't have to go there in person. You don't have to pay for travel. You don't have to pay for food and lodging. You can just stay at home. But the problem with it is that you don't know what's happening. I mean, for all you know, the people who are supposed to be initiating you may be drinking beer, eating chips, and watching Sharknado. I mean, and that's that's not going to have much of an effect on you. Or a group may honestly be trying to initiate you, and you pay them some money, and they say, and you're supposed to be reading something at the same time that they're doing their work distantly, and you're supposed to be sensing them, focusing on them, and you're supposed to be perhaps projecting out onto the astral plane, if you know how, and reciting things and doing things. But how do they know, or and you know, it's quite possible that you're sitting at home eating chips, drinking beer, and watching Sharknado. So we're not going to get away from Sharknado. It's just too good. So there is a challenge that well, first of all, you do not get the psychological, visual, oral, and all the other impacts of actually being there. If the people doing the initiation ritual know how to work with the magical energies, how to make the universe vibrate with their voices as they say the words that bring you into the group, well, you're not going to get that. So you miss out a lot when you do this, not a higher planes initiation, but still called an astral initiation. Now, is it possible that everything will go right, that you'll be participating, they'll be participating, and you will somehow be able to get that inner planes initiation too? Yes, it is. So I'm not going to come out like some people and say, oh, these astral initiations where who knows what's happening are fake and don't work, because it's possible that they could work. But the potential effectiveness of them is much, much less than the potential effectiveness of actually going in person to an initiation, a physical in-person initiation, which hopefully will lead to that higher planes astral initiation. So I'm not saying, you know, don't do it or it won't work. I'm just saying that it is less likely to be effective. Now, the main complaint that I will hear about that is from some people who will say, I can't afford to go. I can't afford to travel. I can't do that. And to them, I would say, you know, if you lived in upstate New York and I was living in San Diego, and I said, if you will pay your way out here, I will give you $1 million and it will change your life forever. And that's all you have to do. Find the money, get time off from work, you know, maybe get an extra job for a couple of weeks or a month or two, and earn that money and come out here, and I will give you $1 million and change your life. I would be willing to bet that 999 out of 1,000 people would go, okay, fine, I will do that. And yet, by the same token, people who are told, look, I will help you, and our group will help you be initiated. And I know it's difficult, but if you get the money together and come out here, we will initiate you and it will change your life forever. And people will say, no, I'm not going to do it. It depends upon our priorities. And if people have the priority of wanting to be initiated, then they can come up with it. I mean, let's say you live in New York and you want to come out to California. Round-trip tickets can be had for $300 or $400. Now, how much work would you have to do working an extra job, perhaps on weekends? On a weekend, you could probably make $100. So in a month or two of work, you could get enough money to travel across the country and receive an actual physical initiation. But a lot of people just simply say, oh, no, I'd rather be at home and do it. And that's okay. Blessings to them. I hope it's very effective for them. However, I have never... let me change that. The only I have only heard episodic or what's called anecdotal evidence that it's been effective. That is, for most people I have talked with, I've seen no indication that such astral initiations are effective. For some people, I have no doubt that it works and is wonderful and is powerful. But in my experience and from what I've seen, in most instances, it is not. Ooh, I'm going to get email. By the way, if you don't like what I have to say, my email is Republican Party. So just mail it to RepublicanParty.com, and I'm sure I'll answer it right away.
That's hilarious.
Oh, yes, sure.
Some of the people there may be familiar with a writer. You probably heard of him. His name is H.P. Lovecraft.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, have people, okay, I'm sure people have heard of H.P. Lovecraft out there. For those of you unfamiliar with it, when I was growing up, people would always tell me, Edgar Allan Poe, man, his stuff is scary. And I'd read Edgar Allan Poe and I'd go, oh, that's interesting. It's kind of spooky. And then I'd read H.P. Lovecraft and I'd go, okay, put the damn coffee on, turn on the lights, I am not going to sleep. I mean, his stuff. And he's a terrible writer in a from a writer's point of view, but he just sets this really terrifying mood, and his stories are really, really creepy. And if people have not read anything by H.P. Lovecraft, I would encourage you to try it. Well, in 1936, he wrote a letter to a guy named C.L. Moore, and this was quoted in a book called H.P. Lovecraft, A Life, by a man named S.T. Joshi. And this is what H.P. Lovecraft wrote, so don't blame me on this. As for the Republicans, and this was in 1936, as for the Republicans, how can one regard seriously a frightened, greedy, nostalgic huddle of tradesmen and lucky idlers who shut their eyes to history and science, steel their emotions against decent human sympathy, cling to sordid and provincial ideals, exalting sheer acquisitiveness and condoning artificial hardship for the non-materially shrewd, dwell smugly and sentimentally in a distorted dream cosmos of outmoded phrases and principles and attitudes based on the bygone agricultural handicraft world, and revel in, consciously or unconsciously, mendacious assumptions, such as the notion that real liberty is synonymous with the single detail of unrestricted economic license, or that a rational planning of resource distribution would contravene some vague and mystical, quote, American heritage, unquote. Utterly contrary to the fact and without the slightest foundation in human experience, intellectually the Republican idea deserves the tolerance and respect one gives to the dead.
Wow.
So Lovecraft was not a big fan of Republicans.
Well,
we need to get you back on with Allison.
Yeah, really.
I'm sorry, sis, what?
Oh, I was just saying, my goodness, what a stinging indictment, and I have to agree.
Well, the thing that's scary, as I read that, it sounds like he's talking about the Republicans today, only it was in 1936, so we're talking about 80 years ago.
Yeah.
It was the same thing.
But that's amazing.
Well, they seem to have, like, moved right back into that position over the past, I don't know, 10 or so years?
Probably,
probably
30 or 40 years since the Reagan administration.
Thank you. Correct.
Yeah.
For people who don't know, what happened was is that, first of all, today Reagan, President Reagan, would have never been nominated and could never be involved in the Republican leadership because he was far too liberal for the Republicans today. And however, since that time, there has been a move starting at the lower levels, actually, and countywide, statewide, and so forth, to move the party further and further to the right. The Republican Party has an absolutely astoundingly great tradition. For those who don't know, it was the Republicans who primarily stood against slavery. And Abraham Lincoln was a Republican, but Abraham Lincoln would be just called a left-wing hippie today by Republicans for what, or I should say the Republican leadership. Most Republicans, when you talk to them, are fine, upstanding, wonderful people. It's the leadership who has really taken them away from traditional Republicanism. One of the great leaders of conservative movement was a Republican who was initially Teddy Roosevelt. He started as a Republican, and he was the one who started our wonderful system of national parks. He was an incredible leader, and these were the type of things that Republicans at one time stood for, and somehow they have moved farther and farther to the right. How did we get onto this political thing?
We're following you, sweetheart.
It's called topic drift.
That's right. Well, that's okay. We're good with drifting. Have you ever talked to my sister before? I know you have.
Yes. Well, I went to Venice High School, where in Venice Beach, California, where the motto of the school was rowing, not drifting. So, so we are not supposed to drift. In fact,
my motto is squirrel. Squirrels, I see squirrels. I'm good. Whee!
Right. Back to our guest. Thank you.
Yes, moving right along. In fact, okay, for those people who don't know, I have recently become an acquisition editor for Llewellyn Publications. So if you have a book or an idea for a book, I would love to hear from you. You can reach me at donk@llewellyn.com. And the reason I mention this is because earlier today I've been emailing a person in England about a book on the subject of what's called Enochian chess. And the person who is writing it is, to my mind, the greatest expert. Excuse me, the greatest expert on Enochian chess today. His name is Steve Nichols, and I have Enochian chess boards from him that he made back in the 1970s. So he's been at this for a lot longer than I have, and has gone into it much more deeply. And this book that he is working on is going to be hopefully the ultimate resource on this technology, and I'll go into that in a second, called Enochian Chess. And the reason I mention that is because he has a whole bunch of things that he wants to add and include to the book, and he asked me, is there a page limit as to how much he can write? And I said, while there is no specific maximum page limit, of course we have to consider, will it be financially usable? If it's a 3,000-page book and costs $80 a copy, that would probably be too much. But I said that sometimes we get carried away and we get off topic. So one of the things that I do as an acquisition editor is help a person see when they have gotten off topic and draw them back to focus on what's there. So staying away from drift is important. And I know because I just a few months ago sent in my manuscript for a new book to Llewellyn. Yay. And they sent it back. Yes. You have drifted away from the topics that, or you have gone to subtopics that draw away from the main thrust of the book, and it makes it too big. So what we need you to do is bring it back to the main thrust, get rid of the extras things here, and that way we can publish it and we can get the information out. So sometimes having somebody else read your book and bring things back to where they need to be can be very powerful and very important,
right,
and make your work even better than you thought.
Wow. Well, you know, as an author, you know, well, having been an author and actually taking a step back and getting ready to go back into it soon.
Keep me in mind.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I'm actually,
you know,
I'm actually emailing you an idea right now, Don.
Cool.
Oh, awesome.
publish porn. Sorry.
No. Go ahead.
No, see, now that's why I haven't been writing, because I got out of that.
Actually,
do,
we did publish... Many, many years ago, we published a softcore porn book. It was sort of a sword and sorcery book, a magical fantasy. And I'm not even – it was really, really bad. So I'm not going to even mention the author's name, since he still is writing occult books. But no matter what we did, we could not get that book to sell. Its time was just not right. And
there's a certain market for it. It's, you know, mine actually sold pretty good, but I wasn't comfortable writing that. You know, not that I wasn't good at it, but just wasn't comfortable with it. But as an author, you know, sometimes you're just so in the process and so in the story that, you know, you miss stuff and you miss spellings, you miss, you know, head hopping and all that kind of stuff. So, yes, editors, very, very, very invaluable people. You know, I mean, just there's no price on what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Right there with you. Right there with you. They are gold. They are golden. But I digress. I'm sorry. Like I said, squirrels. But
go
ahead.
I'm sorry. No, you first.
No, I was going to say, you actually write a lot of, you publish a blog on Llewellyn Worldwide. And you've been doing that for quite a few years now, haven't you?
A couple of years, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of years, and you can get to it on Llewellyn's website, or you can on Llewellyn's website, or you can go through my website, because I have a direct link to it on my website. So if you forget Llewellyn's website or don't want to look around there, just go to www.modernmagic.com and you can find my blog there very easily, because right across the top, you'll see it says, there's a button that says blog. And and if you click on that, that takes you right to my Llewellyn blog.
Cool. Now, you know, because I went to post this like the other day, but in some, just to let the listeners know, it sometimes shows up as dmcraig.net, which also works.
Yes, that's true. dmcraig.net is another way to get to me. It's the same website. But I just wanted to make sure that I ended up with the URL. Someone had taken Modern Magic, and I ended up having to pay money for Modern Magic in order to get it. Yes,
well, that's not cool.
No, it's not, but luckily they didn't think enough of it, so I got it fairly cheap. It was only a few hundred bucks.
Yay!
Speaking of Modern Magic, I'm actually very curious as to why or what that term means.
Uh-oh. What was that?
Yes.
Did we lose the guest? What happened?
No. I'm just here. What it means. A lot of people have this idea that magic is all, well, you know, you can go to the bookstores or the library and you get these books and it says just, you know, mix these herbs together and read these words and the magic will happen. And people do that and they become very frustrated because the magic doesn't happen. It doesn't happen at all. Magic is a lot more than just poorly reading words and wand waving. If that was all it took to make magic happen, then every book on magic in the world would be locked up under the Patriot Act because they'd be too dangerous.
Yeah, that's true.
Luckily, it doesn't work that way. There is an entire system of how magic works. And in my book, Modern Magic, it is 12 lessons, is the way I have it set up, where you are given step-by-step instructions on how to develop the skills, talents, and knowledge that each person needs in order to be able to work magic. So if you know nothing about it, if you spend a year working through the book, a month perhaps with each chapter or each lesson, you should be able to know enough to work your own magic, to design your own spells, to join any magical group and understand what they are doing. It is just very nice. Now, the system that I involve in modern magic is primarily ceremonial magic as compared to the natural magic, which is usually favored by various Wiccans, witches, pagans, and so forth. However, I do have the basics and the techniques of natural magic in there. And I also point out that there is that although the techniques of ceremonial magic and natural magic are different, the results can be very much the same. It depends upon what calls to you.
Right.
And in fact, some people would call ceremonial magic high magic and natural magic low magic. And this has brought some people to think, well, ceremonial magic is high and good, and natural magic or low magic is low and therefore bad. But that's not the reason why they have those titles. See, mm-hmm. in the old days, back in the day, when cities were just when cities basically were just forming, you didn't farm in the cities. You farmed outside of the cities.
Right.
And you would farm in lowlands because you needed the water to collect, because quite possibly you didn't have much in the way of irrigation, so you wanted the water to stay there and not run off. So you would be in the lowlands. You'd be working in the fields. You probably didn't have a lot of money, so you used the tools that were around you, the cauldron, a knife, a broom, a stick made into a magic wand, strings that you could tie together, and herbs, of course, and plants. And so these were the basics of natural or low magic. It was low because the people who practiced it were in the lowlands. Now, in the cities, you didn't want them to be in the lowlands because they'd collect not just the water, which would cause disease, but they would also collect waste products. You wanted those
right.
to be flushed out of the cities. So cities tended to be placed in higher areas. Plus, higher areas are easier to defend from attack. So a higher area was the ideal place for cities to be formed. And it was in cities where you started having lots of fairs and the like, and you started to develop excess capital. There were people who had businesses, and they ended up with extra money. And when you have extra money, you have time off. You can buy things. You can buy, like fancy robes and wands and daggers. You can buy books. You can spend time learning foreign languages and studying ancient and studying books. So the magic that developed in the higher areas or high magic tended to be more complex and involved. Some people prefer the more complex and involved. Some people prefer the simpler. It's whatever you are drawn to and that works for you. So, for example, one of the things that I like to say is that if you are doing magic, you should be able to do it skyclad. Okay. You shouldn't have to need a wand, a dagger, and all of these things. You should be able to harness the forces of the universe and be able to work with them, higher forces, your own energies, and so forth, the energies of the god and goddess and various deities, spirits, and so forth. And you don't need robes and sashes and wands and daggers and so forth. But I use robes and wands and daggers and sashes. And you know why? I like it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why. I mean, when you walk into a room and it's decorated incredibly, it's like walking into a different world. And that appeals to me, knowing that I've gotten out of my regular everyday clothes and put on a robe signifies to me that I am changing things. I'm no longer the everyday Donald Michael Craig. Today I am now working as a magician and I'm doing magic. So it triggers me psychologically, emotionally, spiritually. Now, that's something that works for me, but also I can also work with pagan groups and Wiccan groups, and we'll often work skyclad and work powerful magic that way. I remember one of the first skyclad rituals that I did was when I was living a long time ago in San Diego, and there was a woman in our group who was planning on going in for surgery the day after the ritual because she had nodes in one of her breasts. And they were pretty sure that it was cancer. And they had already done a biopsy, and now they needed to do at least a lumpectomy. And they were going to anesthetize her, do a lumpectomy. And if the cancer was serious, they would have probably done a full mastectomy. Well, here we were, a bunch of pagans, a bunch of Wiccans who laugh, who have fun. And when we got down to the serious business, we directed our energies. We called on the god and goddess to send the energy to her and heal her. And the next day, mind you, she went in to surgery. They anesthetized her. They took a look at the x-rays that they just took. They had already, I don't know if people know it, they had already put a little tattoo dot on her breast to show where they would need to go in. And they looked at the x-ray and they said, is this a joke? There's no tumor here at all. She was completely cured. Now, to the best of my knowledge, I haven't seen her in years. She is still free of cancer. Now, I'm not saying that every ritual is going to be successful in that way, but it powerfully impressed me. It was incredible. And I'm telling you, when you can do something like that, it is one of the most amazing experiences in the world, when you can really help someone. She was very grateful, and it was just wonderful. Now, I can't do that all the time with people, but I have begun practicing hypnotherapy, where I help people on a one-to-one basis, as well as giving workshops and trainings in hypnosis. And it's really amazing to have people go through changes of their behavior and really make incredible changes, stopping smoking, ending bad habits, getting rid of fears, intense fears that they've had for perhaps all their lives. It's just a wonderful experience to have somebody really, really know that they have changed and to look at you and just say thank you so much.
Mhm. Now, I actually I was hypnotized the night before my first wedding, and I had seen one of my friends be hypnotized before I was, because I did I think it was a past life regression,
mm-hmm.
But he was from England. And literally, this gentleman hypnotized him into thinking that he was an American. And, I mean, the accent was just absolutely gone. How, I'm curious as to, I mean, how that works, you know, not just with that. I know you go more in depth, and, you know, as to a lot of other hypnotherapists. Sorry.
That's okay. Well, let me explain how that is possible to be done.
Okay.
If in occultism, in fact, I'm just reading a book now, there's a lot of talk about improving your willpower, strengthening your willpower, making your will indomitable. But you know something? When you stand in front of that refrigerator and go, ooh, should I have the cake, that piece of cake? It's the last one. You know, I'm not going to do it. And you go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
If willpower.
Guilty.
Yes.
Hello.
If conscious willpower really was as powerful as everyone said, everybody would be slender. Everyone would be well muscled. Everyone would exercise every day. Everyone would be non-smokers. It would just be simple. But the fact is that the conscious mind really isn't very good at that. And that's a good thing, because I mean, think of what would happen if you had to control yourself consciously just across the street. Okay, I will now turn all my muscles in my neck and allow my head to turn to the left. Inhale. Exhale. I will start to turn my muscles back to look at the right. Inhale. Exhale. Heart continue to pump. Allow the blood to go through, carrying the oxygen and the food. Oh, yes. Uh-oh, don't fart. Okay, keep going. And now I'm going to start to fall forward and catch myself. I mean, it would just be impossible. The conscious mind cannot do that. But the unconscious mind has the power to do all of that. The unconscious mind is absolutely incredible and powerful. And with hypnosis, what we do is we bypass the conscious mind and we talk to the unconscious in a particular way, so that if the unconscious mind is willing to do it, we set up patterns in the unconscious mind so that it will tell the conscious mind what to do. So the unconscious mind is what sets things in motion, and the conscious mind simply obeys what the unconscious tells it to do. Now, for those people who are interested in saying, well, but how can you get rid of an accent? What I would suggest doing is listening to certain singers. If you listen to some singers, classical singers, such as Plácido Domingo, he has this deep accent, but as soon as he starts to sing, suddenly his voice is pure, and he has no or very little accent at all. And there was a guy who used, and boy, his name escapes me right now, he used to be on the Andy Griffith Show. He played the guys, Andy,
Jim Nabors.
Yes, Jim Nabors. Jim Nabors talked that way in real life, but he was also a singer, and if you listen to his accent, his songs, he had no accent when he sang.
Yep.
So the unconscious mind has all this incredible power, and what. As a hypnotherapist, all I do is I help your unconscious mind work coherently with your conscious to do exactly what you want it to do. So that's how you can accomplish that and achieve a lack of an accent, if only temporarily.
Wow. I need one of those sessions. Not necessarily for an accent, but for other stuff.
Well, hypnotherapy is very powerful. The problem with hypnotherapy is that no matter what state you're in, if you want to be a hypnotherapist, all you have to do is put out a sign that says hypnotherapist. And there are, unfortunately, a lot of people who are not very well trained who practice hypnotherapy. And I would urge people there, if you are interested, and hypnotherapy really only works with two things. It can change your belief system, and it can change your behaviors. And that's about it. But that covers a tremendous amount of things. For instance, if you are if your body is having trouble healing, well, you can your unconscious is in has behaviors that your mind says, it's going to take 6 weeks to heal. Well, if you can tell your unconscious mind, well, no, you'll be healed in 3 weeks. It can increase the speed of healing. So even though we're only dealing with behaviors and beliefs, it's very, very powerful. So what I would suggest doing is, if anybody there is interested in obtaining hypnotherapy, check the hypnotherapist's training and experience. You know, ask them, where did you train? How long did you train? Because there are people out there who teach hypnotherapy over a weekend course and tell people to go out and start practicing. And although I had been dabbling with hypnosis for years and years and years, that was the first course that I took. And I quickly realized that, no, you need a lot more to experience and training to do anything practical.
Wow. So is your hypnotherapy specifically done in person?
Yes, there are some people who do hypnotherapy in over the phone or over the internet, but I won't do that. And there are some reasons that I choose not to do that. Here's another interesting thing. When I was attending UCLA, I took a lot of time studying theater and motion pictures. In fact, I said earlier I had studied motion pictures. And one of the things of acting some people have heard of is called method acting. And method acting was popularized or created, if you will, by a guy over in Russia whose name was Konstantin Stanislavski. So it was sometimes called the Stanislavski method. And he has books that you can get in English, such as An Actor Prepares. And in there, Stanislavski has this exercise where he continually limits what the actor can do. And it shows how the actor needs to have all of his faculties. And he said, it's more than that. When you are on stage, you are, and so help me, these are the terms that the translator used, you are projecting rays to the audience. I'm going, whoa, this is magic. And if you are projecting the rays that I'm just an actor playing the part, then your audience is not going to believe it. But what Stanislavski said was, become so familiar with the part that you can honestly say to yourself, if I had the character's background, and if I were placed in the position of the character, then these are exactly the words and actions that I would do. Mm. So it's this idea of projecting rays, and we're doing the same thing with hypnotherapy. You can't see rays over the internet, over the phone, there are some people who even say, oh, I can write it out, and if you just read it, it works. Well, I don't do that. I have to look at the person, see if he or she is actually going into a deep hypnotic trance, see how they are responding to the question, see how they're responding to the suggestions that I'm giving, making sure that they're getting getting the positive response that I want. If there is a situation of regression, there, because regression can be a very powerful tool in hypnosis, there is a phenomenon that sometimes happens, which is called an ab reaction. An ab reaction is a negative psychological, emotional, and sometimes even physical response to being actively involved in past memories. And this can range from anything from being sadness and crying to literally having panic attacks and folding up into a fetal ball. And if you are doing this over the internet or over the phone, you can't see or sense the beginning of this happening. Whereas in person, I can see it, and there are techniques to use which can stop it instantly, or at least within 5 to 10 seconds. And some hypnotists believe, oh, that's good. In fact, psychology says that you want to eventually have the person have this liberating feeling, this explosion of energy, which gets rid of the negativity. Unfortunately, that was Freud's idea, and Jung proved that, in this at least, he was wrong.
Wow.
Jung said, no, it's not that you just reveal it, have them experience this catharsis, and then they're fine. What happens is people are more like onions. You peel away one level and there's another level underneath.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've found in modern hypnosis is that a person does not need to have those, to re-experience those painful feelings anymore. We can get positive changes in behaviors and beliefs without them having to emotionally, psychically, psychologically, and physically experience the ab reaction. Which is one of the things that differentiates hypnotherapy from some forms of psychotherapy.
Right.
In some forms of psychotherapy, the idea is that the psychologist or psychiatrist should know almost immediately what the problem is, and then through weeks, months, or years of working with the person, bring them up to the level where they're about to discover the secret in an emotional outburst, and then just before they discover it for themselves, you reveal it to them so that they think you're incredible and are cured.
Wow.
Don't take my word for it. Ask psychologists and psychiatrists about that. Hypnotherapy is not psychology. It's not psychotherapy. It's not
right.
Psychiatry. I'm not in competition with them. All I do is help people change their mind.
Wow.
These are not the droids you're looking for. He's a chef.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
See, I want that power at some point.
Well, the thing is, all hypnosis in reality, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. I cannot make a person do anything that they do not want to do. So if somebody
right.
were to come to me and say, yeah, I want to quit smoking, one of the first things I do is I ask, well, why do you want to quit smoking? And if they say something like, my wife wants me to do it, or my boss told me to quit smoking, I say, excellent. What I'll do is give you a session on stress reduction and relief and that. And when you are ready to quit smoking for your own reasons, for yourself, when you
yeah.
know that you have to do it and you want to do it, I will give you a session at no additional charge. How's that?
Wow.
Well, that's cool of you.
That's awesome.
Really awesome.
Yeah, well,
as a former smoker,
uh-huh.
I know you have to be in that mindset that you
well,
want.
Absolutely. And see, the thing is that I do not help people. And hypnotherapy, a good hypnotherapist, will not help any person stop smoking. It will not turn a person into an ex-smoker. And why is that? Because, and if anybody listening here is an ex-smoker, they know they'll go into a room and they'll see somebody smoking and they'll go, oh, I miss that. where they'll have a good meal and they'll go, oh, I wish I could have a cigarette, or they'll get hot and doing the nasty with their partner and afterwards going, oh, I would have liked a cigarette. And if you ask somebody, though, who's never been a smoker, well, after meals, do you ever have a sudden desire to smoke a cigarette? And they go, no.
No.
Go, oh, first thing in the morning when you wake up, do you go out and have a cigarette want to? Well, of course not. And after sex, do you want to have a cigarette? And they go, no, I don't want to have a cigarette. Why would I want to? So what we do is we don't help people become ex-smokers or former smokers. We help people become non-smokers. So it no longer becomes an issue of fighting urges, of not wanting to smoke. It becomes an issue of smoking not being an issue. It's just not important. It's not there.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, we can do that in one session. Sometimes some people may want a second or third session if there are some other issues that weren't handled. But generally, one session with a good hypnotherapist should be enough to help them alleviate it and become non-smokers.
That's so cool.
Yeah. No patches, no urges.
Yeah, you know, I honestly wound up in the hospital at one point with gallstones.
Ow.
And they stuck patches on me. And I was livid. You know, because I've got Sicilian blood in me. I'm like, no, you don't tell me no. If I want to do something, you don't tell me no.
I have a friend in New Jersey. His name was Vinny, really, which seems appropriate.
Vinny in New Jersey? I'm surprised.
Yes. Well, he was a heavy smoker, and by heavy smoker, I mean he'd be lighting one cigarette off the next, and he'd do that all day long, and he ended up needing a triple bypass. And while he was in the hospital recovering from the surgery, he had a friends come in, and he'd take the sensors off of him and put them on his friends so that he could go into a stairwell and have a cigarette.
Wow.
Oh, my.
Now, that was hardcore.
Yeah, I have to admit that's pretty hardcore.
You know, and it cracks me up. I'm probably related to that guy. No, I was born in New Jersey, and I still have family in New Jersey, and I think I have a Vinny somewhere.
Everybody has a Vinny in New Jersey.
Exactly. Exactly.
It was very interesting because when I first met Vinny, I had been studying with Raven Grimassi, and at that time, Raven Grimassi had not published any of his, he had not published any of his family tradition.
Oh.
And I went back to New Jersey, and Vinny at the time owned an occult shop, and I was giving workshops there. And he started talking about some stuff, and as he was talking, my jaw dropped. Because he was talking about things that Raven had taught me, and I'm going, wait a second, where did you get that? And his response was, well, what do you mean? It's just stuff that my family does. And, you know, it's like they're good Catholics, this is the stuff they do. They don't call it, they didn't call it Strega, they just called it what we do. And we literally spent the first night talking, sharing all of these things, going, oh, yeah, I know that,
oh,
and there's
goodness.
This and this. And it was just, it just floored me. And some of the people who are listening to this know that there have been questions as to the legitimacy of some Wiccan traditions and pagan traditions and witchcraft traditions that say they're older than about the 50s. Anything from Gerald Gardner. And Raven Grimassi clearly states that his family tradition is much, much older. And it goes back to this ancient tradition. And he at first had a doubter in a professor named Mayok. I think her first name is Sylvia. I'm sorry. Her last name is Malyoka. And she criticized him completely and saying that it's fake, it's based on new things. And he set up a meeting with his mother, and his mother talked to this anthropology professor from the California UC system, and now she's friends with Raven. Saying,
wow.
Yeah, his
wow.
stuff is legitimate.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
And we absolutely love Raven and Stephanie. Actually, we tried to have them on, but I don't know, it didn't work out. They were, I've still got to get back in touch with them and have them.
Oh, you
on.
Should. They love to do stuff like that, and I'm sure that you know if you can work it out. They are wonderful, fun people, and Raven is one of my longest friends, and I deeply cherish their friendship. They are good people. He was my first.
Yes.
He was, in all honesty, my first Wiccan teacher.
Oh,
that's so cool.
Yeah, so I have a great deal of respect for him.
Aww. Yeah, we're definitely going to have to. Well, me being the producer, I need to get back in touch with him and have
him.
Yeah,
in fact, he had written and self-published two books. One was The Book of Ways, which was in two volumes, I believe, and the other was The Book of the Holy Strega. And he self-published those. He published a magazine. And this was like in the days before the internet was big, or it had even started. So it was all done on paper and the like. And other people, such as Scott Cunningham, helped out on that. Well, his books were long out of print because he'd only done a couple hundred of them. And I kept saying, when are you going to write a book for Llewellyn? When are you going to write a book for Llewellyn? And he finally broke down and started writing books. And now, as you know, he has lots of books out. I was the one who, or one of the many people who helped kick him in the pants and got him started. At this time, there was the way pagans communicated was not over the internet, not in forums, but through newsletters that were published and printed all over the world and mailed out to people. And there was a woman who started something called the Wiccan Pagan Press Alliance. And I became a member of that. And her idea was to link people together, and she wrote telling people what other people were doing, giving ideas, suggestions, and so forth. And I finally started saying, so when are you going to write something? And she said, I can't write anything long. And I said, sure you can. So she finally wrote a book, which was called To Ride a Silver Broomstick. It was she's just a sweetheart. I love her dearly, and I helped to get her started. And of course, it was her work that got her going really well. But it was great.
That's awesome. Follow her on Facebook, and I've actually Uncle Bucky's, the Blue Book. That was my first
Big Blue.
Book. Yes, Big Blue was my first book.
I've got a story about that book.
Mm-hmm.
When it first came, of course Llewellyn has, for those who don't know, Buckland's Complete Book of Magic has been a hugely popular book, and it has helped so many people become involved in the craft. And when it first came out, the first edition went through, at least a dozen printings, and people and the Llewellyn authors, editors had gone through it, made it look great, they'd edited it, made it, corrected all the errors, and it had gone through many, many printings. Tens of thousands of people had read it, and nobody noticed a typo on the back cover. And what the typo was, it should have read that Ray Buckland is one of the leading public defenders of Wicca and witchcraft. Only they left out the L in the word public.
Wow, so he was a public defender, okay.
Yes, and there are tens of thousands of copies of that book out there, of that version out there. It's funny to look at things. The book that really helped trigger the modern occult revival, other than my own, Modern Magic, is, of course, The Golden Dawn by Israel Regardi. And it's gone through several different versions. The original version came out in the late 1930s in four separate volumes. Then Llewellyn got the rights to it, and they published a two-volume box set. Mm-hmm. Then they published one with sort of a psychedelic-looking colored cover. Then they did a very elegant one in gold stamping. And these were all hardbound editions. Now it's available in paperbound. But if you look at that gold-bound, one that's blue with gold stamping in it, it says it's the Secret Teachings and Rituals of the Golden Dawn.
Ah.
So you can find typos in various places. For 3 years, I was the editor of Fate magazine. And the very first, the editor-in-chief, in fact, and the very first issue that we did had hundreds of typos and not, so a word to the wise, do not trust the computerized spell check. You know, go over it yourself. And there was also a huge typo on the cover, the front cover. I was just humiliated by it.
Wow.
Oh, no. I've got a quick question regarding Dr. Buckland, because both Raina and I read with the Domino Divination deck. Is there any chance that you guys will publish it again at any point? Because I believe it was published through you guys, right? Through Llewellyn?
Well, I know we did publish one of his decks. I don't know if we are publishing. We did the Gypsy Fortune Telling deck by him.
Yes, that's the one that we use.
Okay, I believe, and I could be wrong, but I believe that is being published now by a company which is called Galdi Press, which is G-A-L-D-E. So you could look that up.
Okay, I'm looking it up right now as we're talking. seriously, both of us absolutely love.
And they may have that. I know they do definitely publish some works by Ray Buckland. And let's see.
Is everyone typing?
Ooh, no.
I think we all are.
Now it has a novel. All I see is a novel by him called Atomic Sunrise.
Okay, yes. See, now I see the Romani Tarot deck.
Oh, there you go.
See, now
okay.
Yeah.
I think that
see,
is that is the deck.
I'm going to pester you now. I'm going to send you a link to what they look like, and I'm going to pester you so you'll pester your bosses so they'll publish this again because I want another deck.
Well, I'm not involved with it. I'm not involved with that. I would suggest writing to the head of Galdi Press. Her name is Phyllis Galdi.
Oh, Phyllis? Okay.
Yeah, Phyllis Galdi. She's the head. And I'm sure she would be delighted to hear from you. And if you ever wanted to talk about UFOs and the paranormal, she is now the head of Fate Magazine. And if you go to Galdi Press and you look up my name, Donald Michael Craig, you will also see that they sell my novel, which is called The Resurrection Murders. They publish my novel, which is an exciting novel about sex, drugs, rock and roll, and a lot of magic, too.
Sweet. That's awesome.
And for those, and just for the listeners, just so everybody knows, Craig is spelled with a K, not a C. So when you search for our guest, please make sure you're using a K. It's K-R-A-I-G, not C-R-A-I-G. So please make sure you have that correct.
That is actually the way I was born. It's not a trick name or anything like that. What happened was my father, my birth father, was he was a football hero in high school and college. And his last name is Katz. Or was Katz, K-A-T-Z.
Yep.
And they used to call him, because he had these big hands so he could catch the football, they called him Shovel Hands Katz. But he was also teased and called Pussy Katz. So when my older brother was born, he decided he didn't want his son to be teased, and he had the name legally changed from Katz to Craig, but he kept the K to signify the old name. Now, the old name Katz is very interesting, actually, because it's a Kabbalistic name. And for those who don't know and who are listening, the Kabbalah plays an important part, sort of underpinning most of Abrahamic religions and most of magic and spiritual practices in the West. And one of the things they work with a lot is abbreviations. And the way Katz is spelled in Hebrew is with just two letters, one called a kaf and one called a tzadi. So if you add a sound ah, there are no vowels in Hebrew, so it would be Katz, the K and the TZ. Well, it so happens that the K and TZ are also the first two letters, or the first letters of two words, Kohen and Tzedek, which means righteous priest. And in Judaism today, people are considered to be one of the remaining three tribes, and I'm of the tribe of the Kohanim, which is the priestly class of Judaism.
Oh, perfect.
That's cool.
That fits perfectly. There you go. I'm definitely learning a lot from you, sir.
Well, then my time has not been wasted.
Absolutely not. And actually, speaking of time, I hate to cut you off. We actually extended a little bit because we were like at 60 seconds just a little while ago, and I was like, no, we can't end the show right now.
Well, we'll have to do this again.
Yes.
Absolutely. We would love to have you back on.
Absolutely.
I would love to be back on.
You are fun and funny and smart and all of the things I like in a guest.
Well, thank you. And earlier, Doreen, I think you said something about how you were gushing. And I was thinking, I'd like to see that. But
oh, gushing?
Wow.
Yeah, It's not pretty.
Oh, let me be the judge of that.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Oh, we'll talk later.
Wow, an on-air proposition. First time on the show, folks. You've heard
Hello. It. Yes, I'm gonna tell your wife. I'm a fan of myself right here now.
Okay. She knows I'm a terrible flirt.
Oh,
no, you're
fine.
An excellent flirt. That's the problem.
Well, thank you.
He's very good at it.
That's what I'm saying.
Years of practice and self-denial.
There you go. Well, Michael Craig, it was an honor to have you on the show, sir.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And we hope
thank
to have you
so
back on really
much.
Soon.
I would like that very much.
Well, we are going to wrap up, so I'm gonna put you on hold. But absolutely, thank you, and we will definitely be in touch. Maybe
great.
A little
thank
bit
you, everybody, for listening.
Thanks for coming on.
Sure. I'd like to leave everybody with...
Oh.
Did you get it?
I'm so sorry.
No.
I put you on hold for... Sorry,
oh, that's okay. No problem.
Say it again. You'd like to leave
I'd like to leave
with?
Everybody with one thought. Did you get it?
No, we didn't. I'm so sorry.
I got it. One thought. Shit. Come on now, people. Nope. Did anybody get that, Dorian?
No, I didn't. I see now. It's still going over my head. I don't get it.
All right, Squirrel. I'll explain it when we're off the air.
Okay. Explain it.
One
have
thought.
A good evening, everyone.
You,
thank
you so much,
you
Doc. Bye-bye.
Dorian,
I
one thought.
One thought.
Did you get it?
No.
Oh.
End the show. Oh, my
one
God.
Thought.
Yeah, my sister's going to lose it because I'm a dick. I am. Seriously, I have no clue what the hell they're talking about. So, of course, she popped an aneurysm. I'm going to go ahead and end the episode. And I'm going to thank you guys for coming on and listening. And thank our guest, Don Michael Craig. And we will see you next week with the Wicked Witch of Zach, Miss Dorothy Morrison. So we will talk to you soon. Love you guys.
Goodbye. Bye.